Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back to the Lanterne Rouge Cycling Podcast for our Paris-Roubaix men and women's preview. The races both on the weekend. Wait, are they on the separate day still, Benji?
Yes, that is correct. Saturday is women's race, Sunday is men's race. So, hey, I like that. I know that Flanders Classics likes it being on the same day because that apparently improves the women's race figures when it comes to viewing figures, but I find it so much harder to follow two races after each other, and I feel like it takes away the enjoyment of both races. That makes sense?
I 100% agree. Like, Saturday now, I am going to watch the women's race. That is my day. That is the big event that day, Sunday. And also, you know, even, I mean, we are a very small minority of people, but yeah, covering both, it's very difficult to recall exactly what happened in both on the same day. But I understand both arguments. Either way, Flanders Classics, they have you keep the momentum of the men's race to carry into an hour of the women's, the last hour of the women's coverage. But we will start with the men's preview. The route is 260 kilometers long. It's a long race as normal, starting in Compiègne, doesn't start in Paris at all. Goes through northeast France, out to Denain, and then to Roubaix. And on the way, first 100Ks is up and sort of rolly. It's actually not perfectly flat, but it is, for all intents and purposes, for these guys, flat, without any cobbles. And then there's 30 sectors.
29, actually.
29? Okay.
Yeah.
29 sectors before finishing in the Velodrome in Roubaix. Three of those sectors are five-star sectors: Tour d'Arenberg, Mont-Saint-Bavel, and Carrefour de l'Arbre, the first of which starts with
100?
About 100Ks to go, more or less. But where's the... If you divided this route into phases, Benji, how would you divide it up?
So with those 29 cobble sectors in the last half, I'd say that about 9 of them is thinning the herd before we arrive at Havre-Avalers and Trouet-d'Arenberg, which is sector 20 and 19. To be clear, they count down the sectors. So the first one is 29, the last one is the last one, which is sector 1 before the Velodrome. Trouet-d'Arenberg and Havre-Avalers, those ones are kind of the gates to hell, is how I perceive them. And afterwards, you've got the first two sectors, which is sector 18 to 16 to 15, which I would consider the phase where outsiders can play in. But once you reach Mont-Saint-Bavel, you're probably going to see favorites attacking. Even in the Orchy sectors, with about 60K to go, you tend to see, not GC action. No, I was going to say GC action, but this ain't no stage race.
Well, the time counts.
Yeah, the time does count. But the favorites attacking is how I say. So that's how I would split it up. Is that the same how you would split it up?
Yeah, I would agree with that. And the Mont-Saint-Bavel, the five-star section is actually quite spaced out. But the closest two are obviously Mont-Saint-Bavel and Carrefour de l'Arbre, which are within about 30Ks of each other in the last hour and a half of the race.
Talking about each sector, we know what they're like now. How do you perceive their difficulty level? Because I feel like Trouet-d'Arenberg is like above the other two.
Yeah,
I think
Mont-Saint-Bavel
is the easier of the three, but are they rated based on solely the difficulty of that cobble sector, or also including the place in the race?
I mean, yeah, maybe, because like Trouet-d'Arenberg, it's 2.3Ks, but that is significantly harder and more difficult and dangerous and decisive for the race, often even 100Ks to go, than the other two. Certainly, Carrefour-Pavel is 1.8 kilometers. Carrefour de l'Arbre is 2.1 kilometers. It's shorter. It's nowhere near as difficult. But then I think, to your point, Benji, Carrefour de l'Arbre comes, what, 2Ks? 2.8Ks straight after Carrefour-Pavel, a four-star sector. And it comes with 20 kilometers left to go in the race with 4 hours done already, 4.5 hours done already. So maybe that's it. It's having such a hard sector deep into the race. But yeah, as you said, like Trade Arenberg really should be a six yeah. star sector if that rating existed. A couple of new sectors have come back in according to the ASO press release.
Yeah.
Who say that the distance covered by the cobbles is slightly longer this year compared to last year. They say that the riders will get reacquainted with the Briastre sector and the Boite Hamlet sector. but they're not far into the race. Yeah. They are
sector 24 and 26.
Yeah, so they shouldn't be too. They're just back in, I guess. Neither of them, they're three star. And can I count? What was the other one called? Brute Hamlet. Can't see Brute Hamlet on their list. Anyway, the big news regarding the route is it dropped yesterday, and it was from, I don't know who initiated it first, but basically the CPA, I shouldn't misquote dear Mr. Hansen, because I don't want to leave out his tweets are sometimes a bit unusual. First it came from Paris-Roubaix, the official Twitter account. For safety reasons and following a request from CPA Cycling, the riders' organization, the riders' union, the Paris-Roubaix organization is modifying the approach to the Trade Arenberg. The route will take a chicane just before the entrance to the sector in order to slow the speed at which the riders enter the sector and limit the risk of crashes on the cobbles. And when I first saw that, I thought, okay, fair enough, no problem.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, Adam Hansen said, you know, the CPA acted on the riders' instructions. The riders have concern about this sector. And to give context for this sector, what normally happens is they come in a straight line over a railway crossing.
Correct.
It's like downhill, false start downhill before, straight line, quite a wide road. And then they hit this sector without turning, Trade Arenberg, at like 60 plus doing sprint leadouts, often in 100 groups of 100 plus. And the first 400 meters of Trade Arenberg is fucking downhill, like literally downhill. And the cobble, and as I said, it has the biggest, the craziest cobbles, the biggest cobbles, and we've seen horrific crashes there. And what happened last year? Fred Wright went down.
Yeah, Fred Wright went down and his bike just collapsed from under him, like straight up. It wasn't really him like steering in the wrong way and going in the wrong direction. No, the bike just disintegrated, like you mentioned the other day. And there was a video that came out. Stefano Rizzato from, I think, Rice Sport uploaded a video of what the chicane, is what they call it, would look like. And like, I know there's this kind of traffic island at the entrance of Trade Arenberg, but I wasn't expecting the chicane that they're talking about to be. You cross the railway, which is about 50 meters before the entrance of Arenberg, and then you've got what I would say a 90 degree corner to the right, an instant U-turn, and then the 90 degree corner on the right straight onto the cobbles. And that's not a chicane, my dude. That's a U-turn just before the cobble sector. And I'm all for safety, but this video does bring ideas into me that I'm fearful of the peloton breaking on a railway to then turn into a 90-degree corner, which, okay, that might be okay, to then have to go through a breaking point, a full-on breaking point U-turn before they have to turn onto the cobbles to the right again.
It's the craziest
there must
shit
have been
seen.
Safer options. Like, we've had the proposals before of like doing automatic the other way around, so you don't have that descending start, that there's so that you'd have a corner before the run-in if you do that. And there's other ways you can do it. There's like a mining site at the entrance where they currently go into Arenberg. You can use the parking lane after the mining site to go around the building to introduce a corner before the entrance. But sorry, but the like,
this is a cyclocross turn. It is a complete 180 turn, very narrow, where they're going to go right, left. It is a cyclocross turn. Only one rider will be able to get through, and the road surface is sketchy. when I thought they were doing a chicane, what I thought they were going to do, Benji, was come not under over the railway, but come from the east along the other road and turn right into Turay-Darrenburg. Because the reason it has to slow the speed down, right, is because if you hit that 60, someone is going to go down through no fault of their own. Someone will crash. And last year it affected the race, not just Asgreen and Van Baarle right going down, but then everyone behind that crash was out of the race, gone, finished, 100 k's to go. And the bikes, a lot of they run different widths and pressures and everything. They are not, I'm sorry, I do not believe the bikes are designed to hit the cobbles at 65. To hit the Turay-Darrenburg cobbles on the downhill at 65. And it is literally Russian roulette. Laporte has lucked out on that Russian roulette. Like, you just see people's bikes collapse. Like, who's the Israel rider? His front wheel just disintegrated on this sector. So I completely agree with trying to decrease the speed. I thought they would come from the right angle and have to turn into it on a real road. And there is a divider there. But this, Van der Poel, what was his reaction? He said, is this a joke?
Yeah, he tweeted.
Even though this suits Van der Poel. Because they'll have him at the front and he'll go through that turn quickest. It suits him, by the way.
And then Dylan van Baarle posted the opposite, posted a thanking reaction, thanking emoji towards the
I thought that was praying to Jesus.
I actually think it was thanking because Richard Plugger from Visma Lisa Bike was also being thankful for the initiation for safety with plugging the safer organization again and so forth. But Dylan van Baarle, this is the worst case scenario, right? Because he's unlikely to be in the first 30 riders going into this. Looking at how he rode in RVV when it comes to his positioning, he's going to be in the last two riders going into this. So he's going to be fucked with this change.
Yeah, it's exactly, as I say, it benefits Van der Poel. Now, when did you find out that Turay-Darrenburg was going to be used in this race, Benji? Was that news to you?
What do you mean? This sector was going to be used.
Yeah.
No, that was not news to me. What is that for a question?
Well, I'm just saying, why was this announced yesterday?
Yeah, that I fully agree with that. My first reaction when this came out was not, why is this safer or not?
This fucking second bit, everyone knows it's dangerous. You could change it in October, man.
It's 360 days since the last Paris-Roubaix. Why does it need to be announced on the last Wednesday before the Sunday where the race is ridden?
And they put
do not understand that. And then the question is, okay, the race organization might have decided it in the last week because they had to go through the local authorities to see whether that would work or not. But
but they couldn't. Benji, they couldn't. That's the problem. They haven't changed the route. If they had more time, maybe they could then do the route I said from the other way.
Yeah.
But with shorter notice, you have to basically, they're not doing a different route. Instead of just going straight over I saw a funny video of a Formula One video of where someone that just went straight and a turn and it was like, Don Ivan Garcia Cortina he will be like, fuck your chicane. I'm going straight to Turay-Darrenburg. My GPX file says I gotta go straight. But yeah, it's like, come on. Maybe it's good. Maybe it's good. Maybe we're overreacting. You know, maybe we don't understand. But
you know what this smells
chicane
like?
Looks sketch.
You know what this smells like? We see this quite a lot, I think. The CPA goes to ASO or goes to a race organization to get a safer result, and they get the middle way instead. That's what this feels like.
Yes. Yeah. Where they're like, that happened with what was it?
Some Giro thing, I think. No. Or with
the Crans-Montana stage in the Giro. And they still did the dangerous descent. Anyway, will it change? They will be scrubbing off speed, but now basically there's going to be a huge fight for that chicane, that pinch. Because it's a choke point. That's the craziest choke point. And literally every DS is going to tell their riders to be at the front.
Yeah.
Like really at the front there. So. We'll see, but maybe you'd rather crash there than crash on the cobbles, I guess.
I think that's an argument. That's an argument that some riders will say. I'd rather prefer to crash at, let's say, 45k an hour in that corner than at 60k an hour on the cobbles. Because if you crash on the flat, I think Terpstra said this in some article or podcast or whatever, or just saw it being referenced on Twitter, that you get contusions and abrasions and so forth on the asphalt, and historically never fractures. And then on the cobble sector, you're more likely to get fractures because you hit the actual cobble like on the corner, stuff like that. So if that are like that argument, I understand, but I fear for crashes anyway, and I hope that no one crashes here. That's my feeling about it.
Yeah. Last year, in fact, Jumbo-Visma, in anticipation of Arenberg, jumped on Haveluio-Wallier and created a split before this sector in 2023, and that they were with Van der Poel with Philipsen. It was just, they were actually just with Degenkolb.
Oh, yeah. Degenstash.
I can't remember if Ganna even was there, but it was a very, very small group. Might have even been four guys. And then on Arenberg, Laporte punctured anyway. Then there was the crash on Arenberg. Vermeersch and Philipsen got across. Ganna, Pedersen got across. Strongman group with those big boys in Kung, and got across the breakaway with Valscheid. And Alpecin rolled through, and Van der Poel. And then on Carrefour de Labre, he was going to go. Bumped shoulders with Degenkolb. Van Aert attacked, punctured, Van der Poel won. And but that was a decent addition, but you could see that, you know, Visma attacking on Haveluio-Wallier in anticipation of Arenberg probably did that for a reason. Maybe we'll see that again even this year from... I mean, Alpecin don't need to do it because they can just...
I don't see it.
Why would they do it? They position Van der Poel so well anyway.
Yeah, I agree. And we saw that 2023... feeling, and obviously it depends on whether it's rain or dry, because that does affect race. But before we jump into rain or dry, very quickly, when I look at the favorites, I'm thinking Alpecin with MVDP, Jasper Philipsen, Little Trek with Pedersen, and even Milan, because it's a much flatter race. So in my head, that should work better. Technique wise, I'm not 100% certain when it comes to Roubaix, but he handled the cobbles in RVV very well, but that's different material. Like these teams, at first glance, don't shout like teams that necessarily want to open it up early.
Yeah, I agree. Because like, there's no Van Aert here. Let me look at the provisional. There's no... I was going to see if Laporte's in the provisional. It's Alpecin. I think Alpecin have the top two favorites. Like when I look at the betting market, it's Van der Poel at $2.60, Philipsen's at $5, which I think he was even shorter. That was crazy to me. Pedersen's third favorite at $7. He was a bit longer before. Degenkolb fourth favorite, which is also awesome. Surprising. I mean, yeah, but that doesn't mean he's going to come top three or four, Benji. That's just what the bookies think. I mean, I do not agree with it, but he's on 15. Ganna.
Mate, he would have won last year, and then Van der Poel crashed him out.
Facts. Ganna's fifth favorite I don't think he's doing this race, so that goes to show I'm pretty sure he wasn't doing it. Niels Pollitt on 26, Bettiol 26, Van Baarle 34, Moritz 34, Milan 34, Tarling 34, Merlier has shortened a lot. He was a lot longer, 34. Lawrence Rex 41, Kung 51. That's somewhat surprising to me that Tim Merlier starts this race shorter than Stefan Kung.
Yeah.
Mikael Berg 51, Lampard 67, and we'll get into some roughies later. But I fundamentally disagree with Philipsen being shorter than Pedersen. I don't know how you get to that. I think last year, like Philipsen made the split, Benji, because of the chaos on Arenberg, which is not always replicable. Alpecin being in good position will be replicable. Philipsen being quite good will be, or very good, will be replicable. But in the end, he had a magic carpet ride from Arenberg onwards. Not pulling too much, not closing attacks in the wheels. And it was actually a very stable race because Alpecin were controlling it all the way, basically, to the last climb, to the last five-star sector. And anything that happened in between is Van der Poel jumping and Van Aert closing him and Philipsen in the wheel. So I'm really surprised to see him shorter than Pedersen. Pedersen, who's in good form.
Yeah, and looking at that, I agree. I think Pedersen is definitely a very, very good rider for this parkour. I think this fits him much better than RVV. He's had bad luck in previous editions. Rogue crashing him out on Truid Ardenberg, for example. That one year where he crashed out before Ardenberg even began because he crashed on the right side of the road into some kind of like, I don't know what it was, but into something in a rather big crash early on. Like, he has bad luck in the past. In other editions, like last year, I was expecting him to be tiny bit better, to be honest. Because last year I was expecting more from him. But then looking at it this year, maybe the playing bookmaker's advocate for a second, Philipsen can benefit from Vanderpool being in the race. As sure. In Vanderpool is the rider that would be the earlier attacker looking at that team, trying to get the other favorites out of their nests. And then the favorites that are not with Vanderpool need to bring themselves back to Vanderpool. And Philipsen could be sitting in the wheel. We've seen this numerous times in this race before, that you get the kind of scenario where someone benefits from sitting in the wheel at the back of the race and then returns and does something magical. We've seen this before, and that is not unlikely to happen. I think the Gilbert Lampard year, if I recall correctly. Is that a year that existed? I think it existed back in 2018, pure guess. Like, those kind of years had those vibes. But there's also a whole other aspect to this race where it's not always the favorite that wins this race.
No.
And that's the beauty of it. My favorite edition of Paris-Roubaix, when it comes to the race, not when it comes to the winner. I will solemnly hate the winner for the rest of my life as a Tom Bonin stan. Paris-Roubaix 2016, when Matthew Heyman won from the early move, early breakaway, stuff like that. We've had numerous moments like that, where he gets into the final, the favorites catch up, and then it's like a mano-a-mano battle on the last couple of sectors, even leading towards the Velodrome, where it was fought out in the end. Bono was boxed in by the evil Belgian called Sepp van Marke, the traitor of the country, and that's how Matthew Heyman won the race. And that is my favorite edition of Paris-Roubaix that I vividly remember. And I think that's also the beauty of this race, that there's unlikely riders that will step up, or maybe likely riders that will step up and beat her in the final. We saw other moments like 2011, where Van Summeren, for example, after Ardenberg on the big road, decided to anticipate together with some other riders, got ahead, and he was never caught again. And those editions are the ones that stay in your mind. Not for me the ones where the favorites win, but the ones where you got the upset. You got the riders that are not expected to be there that suddenly hammer it home. And that's why I love this race. That's why Paris-Roubaix is my favorite race. And I think there's also people like that on the start list. And Laurens Rex?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Laurens Rex is kind of just good now. Laurens Rex, he started the week top 10 in the odds. So he's not even like a real big underdog anymore. But he is obviously, if he won the race. But yeah, Laurens Rex, he's good as hell. Like, and there's just a lot of riders, right, where they cannot do the repeated 2-minute power, or not even 1-minute power that RVV demands of them. They have a very high absolute threshold. They and they weigh 80 kilos plus, maybe 85, 87 kilos. Laurens Rex, a big dude. And they just cannot do the watts per kilo on those steep Flandrian climbs to follow the Vanderpools, who are 75 kilos. But technically, they're very good. On the cobbles, they're very good. They got that dog in them. And that's why we see, literally, there's Roubaix special. Heyman was a Roubaix specialist.
Yeah.
Like, yes, his win was, you know, a very big underdog story, but he came top 10 in other years. Like, he regularly was good in Roubaix. Yeah. And Laurens Rex, I think, is that type of operator. And
Riley Sheehan?
Yeah. Oh, we're going to do the Ruffy discussion.
Am I stealing all your picks, my friend?
Well, nah, Sheehan, I'll give you up, but that's my favorite part of Roubaix. But we'll just go through more the proper favorites team. So
yeah,
Trek, Milan, and Pedersen. I think their team is going to be very, very good because there's riders like Danola who are even better in Roubaix. Like, you put Danola in the early break here, nasty. Trek, I think, should have a very, very strong. I can never find Trek on the, because I'm always looking for red, and they're not red. They got Edward Turns as well. It's a blue kit predominantly. Alpecin, Vermeersch, Philipsen, Van der Poel, very, very good team. Vermeersch, this is probably his best race as well. He's so good in Roubaix. Yeah. Van der Poel, what do you think? Trek, I don't really know what they're going to do. I think, actually, I'm worried Trek are going to try open up too early, like Pedersen does in the Belgian Classics, and I think that's actually unnecessary here. I really don't think he needs to do that. I would go deep into the race and try and keep Milan with him and then try play Milan later, because Pedersen can win the sprint against Van der Poel, as we saw in Gent-Wevelgem. What do you think Alpecin will do?
Well, firstly, I agree with your little Trek theory. That's one of the reasons that I don't expect those two teams to open it up early necessarily.
Yeah.
And I think Alpecin de Koenig will have to trust that their riders are strong enough to beat the others in the first place. Because when it's wet, when the road is wet, when the cobbles are wet, Mathieu van der Poel has a significant individual advantage over other riders in this peloton when it comes to technique on the cobbles. That's how I perceive it. Will be easier for him to ride away on the cobbles if it's wet. If it's dry, that distance is lower. So then it matters of how long they can control the race as a team before Van der Poel makes a move. That makes sense, because it's not just the cobbles, but I expect teams to try and benefit from the portions between the cobbles, maybe just after a cobble sector.
Like 22. Like 2022, when he and Van Aert had no teammates in the last 50, 60 Ks, and Van Baal, Kung, Moritz were attacking them between the sectors.
Exactly. Those kind of moments, you kind of need to have Van der Poel attack just before that moment to reduce the group enough to be able to make it a controllable group. And then you hope that you still have a Philipsen and a Vermeersch there to help you control it. That's a scenario I'm looking into, I'd say, when it comes to Alpecin. So it's about finding the balance of where your team won't be able to control it anymore and then make a move, which I think is around Orchy, Mons and Pevel. Between those sectors, I expect the first attack of Mathieu van der Poel.
Yeah, that sounds about right. What's that, 60, 70 Ks to go? He usually does one. It's like a thinning attack, like he did on second Quarmont. He thins it, so it's controllable. Okay, Kung, maybe they, and now that Tarling, oh, we'll rotate with him. We don't have teammates either. We'll keep in front of the chaos behind. Then he gets to the last 2 5-star sectors and he can really end the race. Probably he's looking to go on Monzon-Pavel or Cuthbert Labra, which is what happened last year. He went on the last 5-star sector and Van Aert punctured. Trek have got more options, but then there's Philipsen. Maybe we're underrating Philipsen. Maybe he can... he's a sprinter. I think they keep him in the wheels. Favored.
Yeah. Yes, but once you reach a group small enough that you could consider rolling attacks, I think they will make that decision.
Yeah. Other teams, so Visma obviously do not have Van Aert. I don't know if Jorgensen or Laporte are starting. They got Van Baal, who's obviously a previous winner of this race only 2 years ago, but he struggled with positioning so far this season. There's Movistar, the newfound classics team, with García Cortina and Lazcano as the two big leaders, and Norsgaard will try to get an early break. Quickstep got Lampaert, Merlier, Asgreen. I think Merlier can be quite good. Lampaert's not looked so good. UnoX, Varensgold, Tiller, Christoph, and I don't know, it kind of seems quite thin. Is
Pollitt? Wellens?
Pollitt's come second in this race before. I think he'll be better than Wellens.
I think so too.
On Morgado. How will Morgado go?
Del Toro and Morgado, I feel like they've got the opposite schedule. Del Toro's riding everything that is not a one-day race. Morgado is riding everything that is a one-day race at this team. What even has a smell of cobble, Morgado is riding. And every single time he looks depressed on the starting point, he's like, oh, I don't like this parkour. I don't like riding in the cobbles. I don't like riding in the rain. And then Morgado does fucking well and gets fifth in RVV. So, I don't know. He might get fifth in Roubaix. I think Roubaix fits him a bit less than RVV in my head, at least. But don't let that stop you, Antonio, because I do believe in you. But I agree, Anna. I've seen a lot of people in the last few weeks, like three people on Twitter, say something along the lines of, Roubaix, one of the weaker monuments because the start list is always super weak. And I don't think it's one of the weaker monuments, but I might actually agree that there's an argument that the start list is not the widest every year, which is because in our review, you've got the punchy plus flat cobbly types. Well, here you have the flat cobbly types in a race. And then some other riders might skip Roubaix because they might feel like RVV and Amstelen and Flèche might fit a bit more together than fitting it together with Roubaix, for example. And I think that's the argument.
Worried about crashing, like Ganna. He should be here,
also,
by the way.
I agree, but my opposite to your argument, or to that argument at least, is while the start list might look thinner, I feel like the list of potential winners is much bigger.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's Van der Poel is shorter for Tour of Flanders, and he's longer here. Yep. Maybe that's because Philipsen. But
also because
of the
parkour. It's more selective RVV, and here you've got the chance to anticipate and be there while you might not have expected it the same morning.
And more randomness can happen, which is good or bad, depending on which side of the coin you end up on. Fred Wright and Morich for Bahrain victorious. Seneschal, Biermans, and Mozzato second in RVV for Arkea B&B. Decathlon with Gotera, Narsen, De Pestel, Bösenhagen, and Paul Fleet on the provisional. Kung leading Groupama FDJ. I don't know if Pithy's doing it or not. I don't think this suits Pithy as much as the Belgian classics. Antomarché with Hugo Page, Turnissen, who I think has come. I think he's 11th and 7th in the past in Roubaix, but that was before 2020. Beanie and Lawrence Rex. Lawrence Rex, I dare say, should be their best rider for this. He came 9th last year, and he's in better shape this year. Compared to that, Jayco, I don't know if Bling will do it, but they'll have Reinders and Valscheid.
Doesn't fit him anyway.
Yeah, I don't think it suits Bling so much, but I assume Valscheid will be doing this. He was in the break last year, actually. Q36 will have Steimler, De Vrindt, and Sheehan Hofstetter for Israel in the provisional. DSM will be led by Degenkolb. And Ineos will have Tarling and Ben Turner. I don't know about Chef, but certainly Tarling and Turner, yeah. And then EF, Bissiger, Bettiol. Bettiol looked very good at the end of Roubaix, at the end of Tour of Flanders, sorry. And Bora will be Jordi Meus, Herzog, Masiuk. I quite like Jordi Meus, actually, given that he came third in Gent Wevelgem and second in Kerner. He's not in bad classic shape. He's just huge, and this suits him better. So I don't... Which team... shouldn't be trying to go in the early break, Benji. I think it's going to be a huge fight.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's always a huge fight when it comes to early breakaway at Roubaix, because a lot of teams realize that it's an opportunity to get deep into the race, but that also means that you might ruin your chances with those riders before the cobbles even start, because you're going to spend so much time trying to get in the breakaway that will get countered by the other teams that are trying to get in the breakaway. So it's not that Alpecin will have to control the entire break formation by themselves. Everybody will control it for them for a specific amount of time, because 10 riders might go, but the other 7 teams might not be in it. And then it keeps on going like that, and that's how the break formation will probably last an hour. Because last year was probably the longest it lasted in a while, because I swear we went into the cobbles with like 3 minutes or something. So that's the vibe, and it's not just creating the gap. If you're in the breakaway, also every single cobble sector, the peloton comes closer, especially on like Havelui, on Trouet, to the point that on Trouet d'Armerick, I feel like if I think through the older editions, there's always a maximum gap of like a few minutes. And sometimes it's 1 minute, sometimes it's 45 seconds. And it's all about trying to keep that gap across the cobble sector, because after the cobble sector, the tempo might die out a little bit. We've seen that a few times before, and then you might create your gap again and survive until the next cobble sector. And that's such a beautiful vibe of this. Sorry that I'm loathing over this. Right? I don't know what loathing means, but I just
loathing
that
means
word.
You despise it.
Fuck.
I think you meant the opposite. I think you meant lusting.
Not sure about that one. But...
Yeah, well, I mean, you really like Roubaix.
I will say, I like Lascano for this. Like,
I don't know about Lascano.
Mate, there's no Koppenberg to walk on.
Technically, he's not so good. He really isn't that good technically. That motherfucker has his 20-minute power. Lascano, his 20-minute absolute power. I swear to God, it might be bigger than Van Aert's. Like, the guy has unbelievable absolute power, but take, like you saw in some of the Flanders moves, he's like dangling off the back, not drafting properly. I don't know. But you're right, but he has to go in a Van Baarle move.
His Ghana last year was also there, and his technique is also not godlike.
I think it's better. I think Ghana's a better bike handler than Lazcano.
Okay. How dare you? The Spanish despise you already. They loathe you.
I think they'll agree with me. No, I like Lazcano. If he gets in an early anticipation move, like you said, then that's the best way for him to do it, because he can't sprint. He's like Van Baarle regen. Why don't we go through? So yeah, I think I see a pretty conventional race, like you said, Benji. Break, big fight for it. Strong break goes. Doesn't get too much time because it takes so much time to go. Alpecin control. They got Dillier, Gogel, that their team is stacked for this. Kielich.
Yeah.
Vermeersch. They control. They enter Trade Arenberg in good position. That thins out the peloton. Maybe then Van der Poel drops the bomb to open it, or in Oshi, and then it gets thinned out again to the real favorites. Maybe they catch the break in that phase. Then Van der Poel tries to attack, or Trek try to do something. I see quite a conventional race in theory. But let's go into some... This is my favorite part of Roubaix. I'm gonna throw some names at you.
Okay.
Yannick Steimler. Q3 6.5. He won GP Denain. He's got to
be
in that
breakaway. Yeah, but everybody crashed out.
Of GP Denain.
Yeah, the entire phase group behind him crashed out. So, but I agree. It might happen here.
Adrien Petit, third in the GP Denain in 22. You know what he did a month later? Sixth in Roubaix.
Yep.
So I like Steimler. I like Tim van Dijk. I'll let you have Sheehan.
You'll let me have. Can I have some riders myself? Can I name some riders myself, my friend?
Okay, you go. I've already picked two. I like Van Dijk and Steimler, but yes, go on.
Well, I said Sheehan. I said Laurens Rex. I don't care that he's higher in odds than you'd expect, but I'm naming it anyway. Someone like Cedric Berlens, but he's hit his knee a few times the last few months, so I'm not sure if that's going to be on the level that I was hoping for at the start of the year at this race. So those are at least three names going into it. I also expect a good race from Naasen, but the problem is from Oliver Naasen that I feel like he always rides conservative, which is good to get that top 10 position and win a group sprint behind. But you're also never in the position where you're actually competitive for the race, you know?
Yeah. I agree.
He's always had bad luck in this race. Broken steers, broken handlebars, broken frames, broken wheel sets, tires that are mechanical, stuff like that. And every edition, like 2017, was a disaster. Every single cobble sector, the guy had bad luck. But there has to be a year where he doesn't have that. And I hope that's this year because of the Van Rijssel bikes, come on. But
yeah.
And because of the salary, that's moving the needle.
Sander de Pestel also in Decathlon. I mean, you won Antwerp Port Epic, which isn't on the road surface the whole time. So I just throw that out there. But I don't really like him, as he doesn't have the form as Steimler.
We've spoken about this man numerous times as a time trialist, and every single time you mention him as this guy should try Roubaix at some point in his career. Josh Darling, like you already mentioned, he got 17 RV, he got 6th in Dwarves of Vlaanderen, and his kind of characteristic is that he doesn't have acceleration at all. He's like, he attacks in slow motion is how I perceive Joshua Darling. And I am very much looking forward to see what he can do on this parkour.
Yeah,
because
I can't wait.
He's got the perfect build for this, but does he have the technique? I don't know.
Yeah, he's Cancellara regen, so I can't wait to see how he goes. Turner's also in very, very good shape, so I'm excited even without Ganna. I mean, if Ganna was there, Ineos team would have been unbelievably good. Like, it's a shame Ganna's not racing, but still, I'm looking forward to seeing Turner and Tarling, what they can do. Abrahamsson, I really, really like. He's another guy who is just all-day trucker. He is second in Dwars Door. That was after being caught from the breakaway. It was kind of like Christoph who got in that break last year and Lazcano. I don't think that was a fluke. I think this guy's legit good. He came 12th in E3, 20th in Gent-Wevelgem, but that was, you know, he's not a sprinter. He still made that group. And if you saw that Tirreno stage, he has all day power. I really, really like Abrahamsson. I think he probably will be you know, ex-best rider in this race.
Was he also not in that Tour de France breakaway last year in the last week?
Yes, with Asgreen.
Yeah.
Asgreen, without Abra Hansen, Asgreen wouldn't have won.
Yeah.
So, he is really someone to keep an eye on. But I'm going to pick Mads Pedersen to win, Benji. I think Pedersen wins. I think Milan. Oh, sorry. I mean, I can pick Milan.
No, you can have it.
I'll take Pedersen. I think Trek get it right. I think this race suits them better. Ken Vavelhem, they got it right. Whereas this is a flatter race. Milan comes into as more of a threat. And they beat, because Albertsen's team is so good here. Van der Poel's so good here. But I just think Pedersen on the flat, it's a lot closer to the level, him and Van der Poel, compared to punchy climbs back to back to back.
Okay, I actually think that's pretty fair. I think Niels Pollitt is going to end really well in this race. Something in me tells me that Pollitt is back at Roubaix. Whether he's going to win, I'm not so sure about that. But I got to stick with what I got, and I don't care about rooting for a favorite in Roubaix. I'm sorry, I've been a Hausler fan my entire life, and in the last years of his career, I can assure you he was not a favorite. So I'm actually going to go for Laurens Rex as my winner.
I mean, I wouldn't call him a favorite. If he wins, I'll say you picked an underdog. I mean, it's Laurens Rex. That's a nice pick. I'm not going for an underdog, really, but.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I would love to see a random win. It's like when Alison Jackson won last year. It's just so cool to see a different winner. And that moves us on to the women's race. That starts in Denain. They skip the first 12 or 13 sectors and start in Denain and finish in Roubaix. So there's no Trouet d'Arenberg. They start with the online of Vendigne. Man, the... I don't like it. 149k, 17 sectors or 16 sectors, finishing in the Velodrome. The two five-star sectors they do are the Mont-Saint-Pervert and Cafle de l'Arbre, so they still have two of the three five-star sectors, and the first 65k's also are a flat asphalt. Everyone in the comments on the Flanders video was saying it's asphalt.
It's asphalt for us.
Yeah, I can't say it any other way, I'm afraid. It's bitumen. It's bitumen road surface without cobbles. The first 65
What is bitumen?
Case. Asphalt.
Sounds like Vitabix. Or what is that? Those cookies for children.
Bitumen is a viscous mixture of hydrocarbons obtained naturally or as a residue from petroleum distillation. You would know what it is, Benji, because your whole fucking country in Belgium hasn't laid a piece of bitumen in about... in its history. It's like what I would call a real road.
Can't believe it, this man. Anyway, what happened in 2023 in this race? Large breakaway forms as D-Works reacted in their usual way, to where they're kind of in the mode of like, we're not going to pace in the peloton all day, so we'll put a domestique of us that has an okay chance in this breakaway in the breakaway itself. Now, vroom, we go further into the race. Last two cobble sectors, break still exists. Behind, the favorites basically crash, including Kopecky. The break goes on to win the race. Marcus from SD-Works crash in the Velodrome. Marta Laak of Serra Tizit basically does a lead out for everybody. And Alison Jackson ends up winning the race. So that's a wonderful addition. Mainly because SD-Works was winning everything, so everybody was celebrating and SD-Works did not win the race. Also that one of those severe underdogs, one of the riders that you wouldn't think would be having a chance to win this race, wins the race. That's the kind of vibe again Roubaix has. So that's what happened last year. And going to the last two editions of this race, I also feel like there's this clear difference between dry and wet Roubaix in the women's race. Because in wet Roubaix in the women's race, you might as well attack on the first sector. Because we've seen that with Deignan. because there are crashes, there are things that happen in the peloton that will cause that peloton to reduce their ability to catch on. Teammates will crash out, stuff like that. Then favorites will look at each other. And that's basically how Deignan won the first edition. So I think wet edition attack as early as possible. Dry edition is slightly different, and their team play comes into it a bit, because then you had the Longobardini attack 2 years ago where Cecchini wasn't responding for SD-Works, who was not good enough to respond to an attack like that. And then SD-Works sold out Kopecky because then they were riding for Chantal van den Broek-Blaak for some fucking reason, and Majerus as leaders. Well, Kopecky was clearly the best rider. So what happened in that team car? I don't know what they were smoking, but anyway, Longobardini won that edition. I don't know. Looking at the start list again and how the races we've had this year, SD-Works is not looking as strong as they were last year, but I still feel like this is Kopecky's better race.
Yeah, I don't know what's up with it with Kopecky. It's like she's not, like in Flanders, it wasn't like she fully cracked, like she finished really quite well, but she just didn't seem to have the actual level she had last year. Elisa Longobardini on the provisional start list. We're recording this on Thursday morning. The race is on Saturday. We still don't have, so the race in 48 hours, we really don't have much more than some tenuous provisionals on first cycling. But Longobardini's not on Little Trek's provisional. She won, as Benji said, 2 years
ago. She's probably going to be there.
She should be there. This is a race that probably suits Balsamo more, just like with the men's, the flatter it is, the better it is for the classic sprinters, like Balsamo, like Vibers, like even a Charlotte Cool, like Voss. So it really is, I would say, I mean, the racing's been quite open so far this classic season. But it even brings, even if Kopecky was in top form, someone like Voss or Balsamo have a decent chance anyway. But I think Trek will be the strongest team by far.
Yeah.
Balsamo, Brand, Van Dijk, Longobardini, that to me is just so, so strong. Because, yeah, there's Kopecky, Vibers, but that's two. And with Royster out, that's two against four absolute guns on this parkour.
Yes, but I also expect in the last, 50 kilometers, Majerus to be still be there when a Van Dijk is still there. I think this is Lucinda Brand's best race when it comes to Trek. I fully agree with that. I think if you look at the rest of his D-work, so I don't know who's going to be the other riders in the team, but I expect maybe a Femke Marcus, maybe a Mischa Bredewold, for example, who I also expect to be strong in a parkour like this. So I think they're not going to be too badly off either. So I do expect that team to be somewhat strong. It just depends on how the other teams react in the early breakaway formation. Will Trek now be considered controlling breakaway next to SD Works?
I think they will.
DSM with Pfeiffer Georgie is one of my candidates for this race, because I think on the real climbing in RVV, that's where she is a bit meh, but podium Pfeiffer Georgie is in my head.
There's also Canyon SRAM we haven't mentioned, but they have Alice Towers, Zoe Backstedt, Shabby Paladin, Skalniak Soika on the provisional. I'm keen to see how Zoe Backstedt goes. She, after winning World Championships under 23 cyclocross 19, she has done Drenthe, Brugge de Panne, and Veluwe, but no big results. But you know, with a talent like this, who knows? So keen to see how she goes on the cobbles. Cordon Rigaud at Human Powered Health. EF have been, obviously you have to mention them because they've strengthened this year and come with Alison Jackson, last year's winner of this race. And they have Nomi Rug. Who else they have? Borghese, she's been good. Hentala, Kessler, Lebecki. So they're quite a strong team. No Digert, though. Sorry, I didn't mention on Canyon SRAM Provisional. She's crashed quite a lot already. Movistar with Odd Bienic. She's sort of probably the best race for her to go for her own result, typically as a rouleur, but she didn't fit. I think she's had some bad luck with crashes here before. Gutierrez, Emma Norsgaard is she's not like broken through in this race, but it's a race that really should suit her well. The Ruiz Perez sisters, which I'm surprised by, and Sierra. Georgie Cool at DSM Firmenich. And I think Marcus Rihanna Marcus, was she? I saw on Instagram she's on the mountain. Was she? Like, why isn't Marcus here?
Focus on the Hill Classics, maybe?
Pure guess. Yeah. I don't know.
Like, Voss is riding all the Cobble Classics back in form for that, so I'm not sure Voss will be able to do one of those Hill Classics, especially LBL, especially Flesh does seem too hard for Voss, in my opinion, so I think that might be the reason towards that. I don't know whether she got injured or something at a certain point, and maybe that's why her preparation was a bit later, but looking at the start list, I still feel like I have that vibe of, okay, this is not a very strong start list. As in, you've got the big teams, you've got some underdogs, but just like the men's start list of Roubaix, it's as if less people show up than at RVV, for example. And I don't know if that makes it easier or harder to predict a race, actually. Because I'm going through the possible scenarios, and I feel like it's going to be a game of chess between Little Trek and SD-Works.
I think so, and I think Little Trek are gonna come out on top most likely in that game of chess. But to your point, I think it's like with the men's. There's a rider you we'd never mention in an RVV preview that we should mention here, like a Marta Luck, for example. She came sixth last year. She was in the breakaway, I think, and she's also improved. I think like this year she's 12th in Drenthe. I think she's. She's probably improved a little bit since then. I'll say, can these riders win? You gotta say yes or no. Letizia Paternoster.
Maybe. I don't.
Yes or no.
I'd say just under yes, just in no.
Christina Schweinberger.
With this year's form, no.
Okay. Pfeiffer Georgie.
Yes.
Yeah, so I mean there's right. A few outside.
You're gonna do three names and that's it?
No. I'm still going. Amber Crack or Grace Brown.
No.
Okay. Fair enough. So yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe it's not as open as one would originally think, but I think it's going to be Trek. I really think it's going to be Trek. I don't know if it's going to be Longo Borghini or Balsamo, but I really think it's going to be one of those two. I would probably go with Longo Borghini. Longo Borghini was the strongest in RVV. They can play numbers. They can control the race. For an outsider, I do like the two outsiders. I think Schweinberger is in good shape. She came ninth in Gent-Wevelgem, and she actually made the split, the first real split with a small group of riders. And she was some other top tens as well. I really like Schweinberger for it. And Paternoster. If I had to pick like a real outsider to really win, because she can sprint, I would pick Paternoster. I think this suits her more than RVV in theory with, she's getting dropped on the climbs and she's a sprinter. So I like her for it.
I think I'm going to go with Lucinda Brand.
Okay, you think she gets it done?
Yep, she didn't show up on top in the Cobble Classic so far, 22nd in RVV and so forth, but that's also very different races, and she's shown to be very fucking good at Roubaix in the last few years, and I think we forget that because of the other races in the season that she might not be excellent at. So for me, it's one of those riders that has a clear underrated potential. Co-favorite is maybe a bit exaggerated, but a high-end underdog for this race. And if I have to choose any other names next to that, like I said, Georgie. But the thing with Georgie as well, it's like Bullet in the men's race. They have to get away solo because she has some sprint, but she doesn't have the same sprint as Wiebes, Kopecky, as Balsamo. So
we haven't mentioned Wiebes, like given how she looked in RVV.
She's fucking good.
Why would she be immediately gapped here?
Well, she might not be gapped, but I just expect SD-Works with the riders they have to not choose her as the first option to respond to rolling attacks by Little Trek, which might make it so she never gets to see that front by the end of the Volodrome. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I understand. It's like what happened in RVV. Like when Shirin Van Anroy screened through, race over for Vipers.
Question. Luke is harassing us because he's asking us why we don't talk about Alan van Dijk. And the thing is
you just picked Brand, a Dutch winner. What more does he want?
I actually believe like last year, Alan van Dijk, one of the top favorites. But I don't know if she's at that level yet. She's coming back from a pregnancy break from cycling, and she's shown to be good in the likes of Gent Wevelgem when it comes to controlling, but that's very different compared to being at the front of the race and being there every single time. Like, on paper, Peak van Dijk is fucking good at this race. But I don't know if she currently exists at this very moment. So that's why I find it hard to name her as one of the favorites.
And they have three leaders I think they'll protect, being Balsamo, Longaborghini, and Brand. And so eventually you have to have, in a team of six, some people to do the heavy lifting. And Van Dijk, I think, you're right. She'll be the first, before Brand, before the other two, she'll be having to do that role like we saw in the finish of Gent Wevelgem. She closed that race down very well. But yeah, Trek have won two of the three editions of this race, Paris-Roubaix, Femme-Avec, Zwift. So the only edition they didn't win was when the break won, when there was the game of chicken with SD Works chasing. So I really think little Trek are going to dominate because they look even better this year. The only thing that can stop them is, I think, a storming Vibas if she carries that form from RVV. But final picks, Benji, who are you going with?
Brand,
I'm going with Paternoster.
Okay.
I think Paternoster goes with like a Trek rider, maybe even Elisa Longaborghini herself, and she pulls like in Strade with Capecchi.
But
and Paternoster does it.
Am I wrong in not choosing her because she looks too light for flat cobbles like Roubaix?
Who?
Paternoster.
Oh, nah, she's like a classic sprinter, no? She's not like Guy Realini.
Yeah, she isn't like Guy Realini, but we're talking 1.64 meters. We're not talking about 1.75 meters kind of vibe. It might just be me, but...
Yeah, but...
When I think of Roubaix, I think about Alan van Dijk, the monstering over the cobbles. I've seen Brandt monstering over the cobbles, and I feel like there's a difference there.
Yeah, but Shabby,
I agree.
Shabby
she's fucking
fourth.
Good at the moment.
Shabby came fourth, and she's a puncher. She's small. I'm not sure it holds the same, but maybe she just has. Maybe Shabby's the exception. I would say, yeah, like, but yeah, I'm going with Paternoster. I think she's in career best shape, and if it comes to a small group, she can win the sprint against almost anybody. Except Mariana Vos, who we haven't mentioned, but I think Vos.
Yeah.
I think.
But.
Vos versus Capecchi head to head. I got Vos.
Yeah, easily. Like, she's one of the smartest riders in the peloton. She's one of the strongest riders in the peloton. She's fucking good on a parkour like Paris-Roubaix. So I expect her to be at the front end. The only fear I have is that she won't have. There's no four Vosses. Fortunately for the competition, but that also means that she can't respond to every single attack that Little Track does, that every single attack that SD Works does. So she has to choose exactly the right one, which she's good at, but there's a limit to that. So,
which we saw in RVV, she missed Van Anroy.
Yep.
But yeah, all over.
That's it.
Okay, I've got I'm going the underdogs. You're going the Lucinda Brand.
She's an underdog.
I mean, you're trying to sneak these underdogs in here, Benji, and claim like underdogs. Lawrence Rex and Lucinda Brand.
Mate,
I'll give you Rex. I won't give you Brand. Not on
but
the
you
strongest
won't give
team.
Me Lucinda Brand. How dare you?
I'll give it to you, but not as an underdog. They're the strongest team in the race.
Not having it.
You can have it, but I'm not.
The comment
giving you...
section will be on my side. And that's what matters to me.
I don't think they will. I think they'll be like, Lucinda Brand is going to be good. Like, she's a race she can really win. But I'll give you Rex. All right. I hope you enjoyed our Paris-Roubaix Femme-Avec Zwift preview as well as the men's preview. Let us know who you think is going to win. Who is an underdog? Who isn't? Am I being uncharitable? I can't wait to watch the women's race on Saturday. It's like a blockbuster weekend. I really like how it's women's on Saturday, men's on Sunday. Make sure you watch both races, and we'll be recapping both straight after they finish.
My women's equivalent of Lawrence Rex is Marte Truyen.
Marte Truyen. Okay. Mine was Schweinberger. He's like,
She's like Lucinda Brandt.
No,
but not on the favorites team.
Schweinberger's like Rex.
Okay, fair. I'll take it.
Okay, hope you enjoyed both previews. Benji and I are going to keep arguing about this off air to find who is an underdog and who isn't. And we'll see you with a recap on Saturday afternoon. Till then, ciao.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.